Hi, my name is Swazik Jeffrey, creator of A Good Sport, a graphic memoir about sports and the meaning of life. I'm promoting my Zoop crowdfunding campaign starting November 2023, and you're watching or listening to Two Geeks Talking.
Hi, I'm Terry Madison Avery, publisher of Stack Deck Press. You can find me online at Instagram at Stack Deck Press, Facebook at Stack Deck Press, and also Threads and Blue Sky at Stack Deck Press. And you're watching and listening to Two Geeks Talking.
Good morning, afternoon, evening, everyone. Two Geeks Talking is an entertainment industry interview show where we interview the creative people from the comic, film, TV, movie, and video game industries. And of course, I'm your host, Kurt Sasso. We are joined today by a very talented comic creator. She's not only a comic creator, she's an athlete. She has created an amazing graphic memoir called A Good Sport. We're also going to be joined by the publisher as well, too, Tara Avery, who is a longtime friend and guest of the show as well. We're joined by the ever-talented Swazik Jaffrey. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Thank you, Kirk, for having me.
Well, it's good to have you. And when Tara comes on, we'll talk about the publisher of this amazing comic as well, too. For those that don't know anything about yourself as a creative person, tell us who you are and what you're bringing to Two Geeks Talking today.
I'm a comic artist. I was born in France, born and raised. I'm currently living in France. I spent a lot of time in the US as a teenager and an adult. I am self-taught comic artist. I have no formal art training. And I started making comics as a kid and really seriously started making comics when I turned 30 years old. I had my apartment. I started working full-time and I thought, you know, I had to clean up my desk and start making comics for real. It took me years to develop my style. I first didn't know what story to tell until I realized it's not really the story, the idea for a story that is the issue here. It's how you tell the story. And my goal was always to find my unique voice. I don't need to make comics. I don't want to earn a living making comics. This whole book I've been working on is about playing. It's not really about sports. I wouldn't say I'm an athlete, really, although I am somehow, sometimes. But I'm more of a playful being. And when it comes to comics, it's the same. You know, I just want to play around with lines and surfaces and shapes and colors and create something that conveys an emotional message. It's not really the text. You always work on the text. First, I have learned to write a story, but you use the text to organize a work on a layout, and then you create the pages. The text is only a pretext. The real deal is the graphic, the visual art. And so it took me years to develop my own visual style, my own visual identity. And so it's been 15 years. I have published in anthologies and in different publications, Alphabet. You know, I've been addressing through various issues like topics like LGBT and but not just that. Also, poetic comics I have published in Ink Brick. It does not exist anymore, unfortunately. More recently, I have published in Drawing Power. It came out a few years ago by Abrams Books. And A Good Sport is my first graphic novel. So it's a big achievement for me. I always wanted to publish my own book with my name on it. I draw and write. The idea for a book, you know, it's not important. I just picked that idea because something happened in my life. I participated in the gay games in Paris in 2018. And I thought it was going to be fun. I did it because I felt I had to, because the gay games were born in San Francisco. And I feel very close to the city is really close to my heart and LGBT history. And so I really had to take part because the games were taking place in Paris, in my native country. Participating in those games, I realized it was all about friendship. I mean, it goes beyond sports. It goes beyond LGBT rights. It's really about friendship. And I got really emotional. I met people from all over the world, athletes from Africa, from Asia. And I realized how things had changed. You know, 20 years ago, it was just us Europeans and Americans, Canadians also. And now you have people from all over the world traveling, meeting with us. And we're all in there in this game together. So I really felt I had a story here that I had to tell. But it was just an idea. And actually working on the book, it turned into something else. And just because of the way I work, I just found a deeper emotional level. And I just told a story of sports and the meaning of life and what it means to belong and, you know, what it is to win and lose. It's really a story about freedom.
So much to dive into, obviously. I love the fact that you're self-taught and the fact that you use the word play. The word play when it comes to art is something that as adults, we don't usually do anymore because we're so focused in on either careers or we're focused in on life itself and what is our next goal. But once you learn to play with your art and play with your creativity in whatever medium you decide, I think that really frees up not only your mindset, but it also allows you to kind of relive a bit of your childhood that we've all lost in some way, shape, or form.
Yes. Yeah, I made comics as a kid with my three brothers, drawing pictures and telling stories. That was our favorite game. That's all we did. My brothers were also really good artists, but they didn't keep making art as adults. So I continued. And, you know, I really think comic art is monkey business. Has to be. I don't take it seriously. Sometimes it gets very professional and I want to stay away from this. So I like the idea of making indie comics, of making alternative comics. I don't care if my art, my craft is not very professional. Sometimes I see it. I look on it myself as something a bit. Sometimes I feel the quality is not there, but I'm improving, you know, I'm working on my craft, but I know it's authentic. I'm really looking for an authentic, playful, monkey business, you know, type comic art. Yeah, I really have this this playful child, you know, childlike mindset, and never wanted to. I have a job, I'm responsible. I don't really project that image on the job, you know, or in life, but really deep down in my personal life and in comics, which is, you know, my main passion, my main activity. This is what I do. I just play like you would play ball.
Let's talk about the gay games, and let's talk about the basis of this particular amazing comic memoir, A Good Sport. You gave us a brief history, but you also had some amazing people collaborate as well, too, in terms of the introduction. And Tara will be here soon, so we'll obviously get into the why she chose your story in terms of being published as well, which is always great to see. Talk about some of the collaborators and talk about the journey of yourself in the gay games and how it became the basis of your story.
So really the gay games, that's the backstory. The original concept for the project that I had was to tell my experience of the gay games. And then when I started working, I realized I wanted to tell more than just the gay games. The gay games, actually, I lacked knowledge. I had to do a lot of research to really share what the gay games were about. And I found that what I experienced, that was, you know, that bridge to friendship, was actually the initial vocation of the games. And so I learned about Tom Weddle. Strangely enough, I did not know that much about him. I know a lot about San Francisco history, LGBT history, local history, but, you know, I didn't know about Tom Weddle, about the gay games. So I had to do a lot of research. And I came to realize that his vision is really close to my heart. He's got this universal vision, bringing people together. And bringing gay, transgender people, you know, queer people, whatever, people who are ostracized, bring them together around positive values. Because most of the time they gather around negative, so to speak, or painful topics, subjects. You know, you march, you ask for rights, and you riots and, you know, just basically marching. And that's good. You know, we need it. But he had this very positive and light vision of what people should be doing. Also, you know, they should gather and have fun. And that's very empowering, you know, like human beings. I found many of his values to be mine. And so I wanted to tell about this, but like I said, working on the story, I realized there was an initial prehistorical story to my participation to the gay games. I had played sports as a teenager, as an adult. I had played sports as a little girl. And I really wanted to tell the story of that little girl really did not belong. I never, I guess fitting in has always felt out of my league, I like to say. I had to choose between boys and girls always because boys and girls were separated in the, you know, in school, girls would play together, boys would play together. Adults did not decide on this, but kids would do it and adults would let it happen. Girls had to play very stupid games and kind of, it was this initiation game. Like to learn to be a girl is just jump, you know, you had those ropes and it was really boring. I really wanted to play ball and the boys played ball with me until they realized I was a girl. So I did not belong. I did not deserve to be with them. And it would be really violent. Like I would really feel this exclusion, this rejection as violence. And so having to take side, having to toe the line, that's not who I am. So I'm telling that story. And oftentimes as a kid, I had short hair. My mom would let me be who I wanted. So you have no picture of me wearing a dress after the age of 5, because I guess I said, no, I don't want to wear a dress. There is no point. I want to be pretty. I just want to be, I'm a practical girl. And so my mom was like, yeah, right, sure. Yeah. So I had short hair. I had pants on and t-shirts. So I was one of the kids, but I guess I was one of the boys, but I was not a boy and I never wanted to be a boy. But I realized being a girl sucked. I knew it. Very often I was asked if I was a boy or a girl, like, what are you? People knew, but they wanted to hurt my feelings, you know? And so I had to say, I'm a girl. In the book, I keep saying, I'm a bird. I'm really a bird. Of course I'm a girl. Really, I'm free. And so the whole theme of the book gradually became a story about freedom, about finding your own game, you know? And when you play the game of freedom, the ball is in your court and you always win.
Well, that's great. I mean, we all experience different forms of discrimination, but we also find friendships in our own way. And the fact that you found friendship in your life through not only the gay games, but also through your other experiences in life itself, not necessarily attributed to a good sport, but you found your happiness. And I think that's very hard for some people to find their own individuality when it comes to the societal norms that we're always restricted by, which is a true shame. We should live how we want to live. Truly. You've traveled all over the world as well, too. The fact that you lived in the U.S., that you went from the U.S. to France to Saigon. How has that journey around the world helped you in terms of not only your life, but also from your creative standpoint?
I guess I always had a global, you know, global vision. I actually grew up in a small town. My parents were not from this area at all. They ended up living in the town I'm talking about is Angoulême. Angoulême is the small town where the Comic-Con, International Comic-Con, takes place every year. I don't know if you've heard, Angoulême, it's this major Comic-Con. People from all over the world, people from the U.S., come to Angoulême. But Angoulême is a very small town. And as a kid, I saw this Festival International de la Bande Dessinée, this Comic-Con, take place and develop. So it's interesting. I wonder if that's why that's the reason why I started making comics. I don't know. It probably is the reason. I don't think I would have been that inspired to tell stories. You know, my brothers and I would write text and make, you know, pictures and just try making comics. So I grew up in this small town. It was really boring. But my parents had, you know, a different vision of the world, and my mom especially, and my family has this openness to the rest of the world. Yeah, as a teenager, I went to the U.S. to study. Spent a lot of time there, went back, and then with my work and my life being what it is, I just traveled around. I was in Saigon in Vietnam for work a lot, so I'm telling about this because I know a lady there who, she made my bowling shirt for the gay games. And so I'm telling about this. I just never felt just French. I'm very French in many ways. I'm very French. But I really feel like a citizen of the world. So it had to transpire in my book. And also the book, The Gay Games, it's a worldwide event. It travels all around the world. And who knows, it will take place in Africa someday or in the Middle East. Who knows? It's in Asia right now. It's going to happen next month.
Wow.
You know, it took place in Mexico, and there is one part of the game, Gay Games, is taking place in two places this year, in Mexico and in Hong Kong, because Hong Kong is, it's difficult right now. I'm a creative person, but I think I have a problem that many creative people have. I'm all over the map. I can be very disorganized. And I procrastinate because I have so much going on, right? So much going on. And it's hard for me to just sit and do my work. And I just feel overwhelmed. What I do is I embrace the maze. And so I see my work as a puzzle. So maybe my answer to your question is, when you travel all around the world, when you're open to other cultures, I'm very familiar and I feel very close to different cultures, and many cultures are part of who I am. I guess you can draw a parallel and work around, you know, your own identity as a puzzle. And so I embrace that creative maze. Basically, what I've done over the years is I'm self-taught, so I don't do any neat work, professional work that looks good. And I don't know what I'm doing. I just hope it looks good in the end and it's unique. And so I've been running my own experimentation. My game plan to avoid procrastination has been to work fast on bits and pieces, like a puzzle. And I've done this for this book. And I don't know if the result is that good. It's probably good and bad. It will improve next time, next book. It will be better. You know, it's a craft. So I work fast on bits and pieces. And I sew along the way. And I go back and forth. Because working on this book, I realized some of the things I created in one chapter echoed another bit, another chapter. I don't work chronologically, right? I work on bits and pieces, and then I work on a composition. It's also like quilt making. You just sew. It's geometry. Really, I think I told you comics. It's monkey business. comics. It's like a puzzle. You know, I get lost. It's a maze. It's like traveling around the world. You have a maze of cultures. But in the end, if you know what makes sense to you and you have a message to convey, you just take those pieces up and you just build.
So this is a perfect segue into yourself as a publisher, because it has been far too long since you've been on the show personally. It's been over 10 years at least.
Yeah.
Yeah. So welcome back.
Thank you. Yeah. I think at that time I had just, I was doing Gooch, the webcomic.
Yep.
And which was at one point the most popular thing I'd ever done. So
we're jumping into yourself as a publisher these days, which is wonderful to see. Stack Deck Press.
Stack Deck Press. Hard to say, fun to read. Yeah.
Tell us about how you became a publisher after all these years, and what led you to publishing A Good Sport.
I backed into it like most things in my life. I work for Prism Comics. You're probably familiar with Prism. That's PRISM, as in refracted light, not as in incarceration. It's a nonprofit that supports LGBTQ comics creators and fandom coast to coast here in the United States. In 2015, the idea came up to publish a book that commemorated Prism's work with the Queer Press Grant, which has had supported and launched the careers of about, at that point, 10 cartoonists, 10 comics creators, and we were going to make a book to commemorate that. Well, the publisher that we had lined up to publish it for us dropped out. I thought it was a shame because we'd already done a lot of preliminary work on the book. And so I said, well, I'll start a publishing company. At the time, I had a shell corporation lying around we didn't do anything with. And so I converted it into a publishing company according to the Secretary of State of California and got a DBA, and it became Stack Deck Press. Then we published Alphabet, which was an anthology devoted to the winners and strong nominees of the Prism Comics Queer Press Grant, which we were fortunate enough to get a Lambda Literary Award nomination for.
A Good Sport is one of your books that you're publishing. So how did you come across this amazing comic memoir?
Well, Swaz was actually in Alphabet. She'll remember that one. And so we go back, she goes back with STP, and we have a lot of mutual friends in common, including Tyler Cohen, a Bay Area based cartoonist who we published one of her books as well, another memoir. So I think these two are on similar wavelengths. They both have surreal touches, and they both write interesting memoirs. So Foaz approached me, actually. She had this idea for sort of a memoir of her time in the gay games. It also had some connection with, you know, sharing personal wisdom and personal experiences, and, you know, that were sort of adjacent and a consequence of her experiences with athletics. And it just sounded really fascinating. So she was out here visiting California, I guess it was sometime last year, was it, Foaz?
2020.
Yeah. And so we discussed it at a local coffee shop, and thus, yeah, let's do this. And so Swaz has gone from 0 to 60. This thing is practically complete. You know, probably one more proofread to go, and maybe some tweaking and such. But the book is done, and it's really special. I'm just amazed by Swaz's style and insight in this book.
Yeah, that was something we touched on earlier here about being self-taught as an artist, about her traveling around the world. When it comes to this comic itself, it's going to be a Zoop campaign. When is that campaign going to start, and why did you choose Zoop as your platform?
The biggest reason I chose Zoop is they kind of chose me. I was at WonderCon earlier this year. Jordan, one of the Zoops, approached me there and gave me a card and told me about this new crowdfunding platform that was all about indie comics, which I think is great, because I think that with some of the, like, Kickstarter, some of the other platforms, a lot of bigger projects, a lot of big dollar projects kind of, you know, suck up a lot of the oxygen in the room. Zoop, I think, you know, has that focus. A lot of our friends, a lot of our friends and colleagues are on Zoop these days. David Boer just crowdfunded a book there, and other friends like Trina Robbins, you know, recently crowdfunded an anthology there, a benefit anthology for abortion rights. So it just seemed like a good deal, a good vibe there, very flexible. And so we crowdfunded We Belong There earlier this year, which is an upcoming all Black, all LGBTQ sci-fi and fantasy and comics anthology. And that is also very close to completion, waiting on, I think, one more story to come in from one more creator. But that should go to press sometime in the next month. So that's how we got to Zoop. We had a good experience with We Belong, and we hope to have another one with a good sport.
It's great to see a collaboration like this as well, too. I'm glad that, you know, you're able to publish this book. I'm glad that you're both working well together. What is it about a good sport that people will enjoy when they first pick it up?
It's just a delight to look at. I mean, even if you don't read it, which of course you should definitely do, it's just a feast for the eyes. Every page is delightful. Swaz invested a lot of effort in these sort of chapter pages, like the sort of these chapter, you know, breaks that I every one of them, I think, is print worthy artwork. It's something anyone you'd be pleased to hang on your wall, and that alone is worth the price of admission. But, you know, Swaz is a world traveler, an experienced person, an educator, and has a deep love for humanity. So you get all of that in this memoir. And also, I think people can relate to sort of the struggle for freedom. And Swaz draws a through line between the pursuit of athletics and the pursuit of personal freedom. And I think that a lot of people can relate to that. A lot of us have experiences of our own in athletics and fitness and what have. So seeing her out there, you know, bowling and golfing and surfing and all that stuff, you know, that these are all things that a lot of us do, you know, every weekend or more frequently than that. So
sorry, and golfing.
Golfing, yeah. And this isn't, you know, doing the parallel bars or, you know, the decathlon. These are it's stuff people can relate to. And I think it's delightful.
Is there a piece of artwork in the book that you're drawn to every time you flip to that page?
It's hard for me to say. Also, I tend to indulge in self-doubt. So some pictures, some pages I loved, I was so proud. And then I look at them now and I'm not so happy with them. I mean, I love many of my pages, although I see the, you know, small details and things, you know, I would like to improve them. A book is never finished. I would agree. I really love my covers. Every time I worked on my chapter covers front page, I was so happy. It's really a game. And my favorite stage is when I work on the coloring. The coloring for me is hallucination. And by the way, when I work on my comics, I block my mind. I try not to intellectualize. So I listen to a documentary, a very intense documentary, and I just stop thinking and I just draw the page, and I discover new details. I'm surprised even myself. I'm like, did I make that? And that happened most of the time. That happened in a crazy way when I worked on the covers. So I really like all of my covers. I don't know what you think, Tara.
Well, I was about to say that the one in particular, and I've included this on some of our promotional materials, is a picture of you. You know, you're bowling, you're releasing the ball, but instead of releasing it down the lane, you're releasing it into a pinball machine. And that's an observation that Swaz makes. It's so that sports is sort of a big machine. You get caught up in the whirligig, and I think the pinball machine is another way of expressing that idea. This sort of thing that you sort of get settled into, that's larger than you, that's got lots of kinetic energy and little tricks and traps to be navigated. And I just love that image. I've shared that a lot. And I mean, the first time I saw it, I shared it with my partners, and they both were kind of dumbstruck by it.
That's what I loved as well, too. Just looking at the collage of the cover, which I utilized in the lower third, I just thought it was just amazing. Just you see something new every time you look at it, and you see a bit of a journey and a bit of a story. Even if you're not aware of the content of the book, you're at least entranced by the actual opening of the book itself, which is just beautiful in my mind.
And I think also the book will appeal to those who love sports, because I showed and paid homage to many sports. But I think the book will also appeal to lovers of the city of San Francisco and local history. I forgot to say, we actually met, Tara and I, at the Queers and Comics Conference in 2015, right?
Mm-hmm. Tara? I think so, yeah. Yeah,
that's how we met. This conference was organized by Jennifer Kemper and Justin Hall. I met again with Tara the year after, and then the years following, and we met each other a year ago. And Justin Hall wrote the introduction for the book. Justin Hall is a cartoonist, a local artist in San Francisco. He teaches at the California College of Art. He wrote in the introduction. It's a big compliment for me, because, you know, he read the book and he said, the book is full of Easter eggs for those who know the history of San Francisco, because I use a lot of archive, you know, pictures from the gay games and also, you know, different aspects of the LGBT history in San Francisco. And so if you know about it, you notice. If you don't know about it, you see it's about LGBT riots or, you know, major events, but people can look into it and find many secret messages and things.
So it's a puzzle within a puzzle.
It's a puzzle, like I said.
As the cartoonist and the author of this particular book, what challenges and rewards did you encounter while creating this graphic memoir?
Well, the challenges were, I had a limited time frame, but that's something that I impose on myself. I didn't want to work on a book for 2-3 years and then see what happens. I told Tara, I'm going to make that book and I will finish it in a year from now. And I did. So a limited amount of time. But like I said, I need to focus and embrace the maze and get things done. So that was the main challenge for me, was to make the book. And the main reward is to actually make the book, finish the book. I'm happy that I was able to use something of value, something interesting, and surprise myself and create something bigger that I did not anticipate, I did not envision in the beginning. And so that's my reward. I was able to explore and play. So it's really a metaphor for the book, for the book's message.
When it comes to this particular book here, you also have humor and lighthearted moments in this particular memoir as well. How did that contribute to your overall narrative of this particular book?
I guess, I'm not sure the book is that funny. I think it is sometimes, but I had never tried to be funny in the book. I think humor in the book is used to demonstrate that playfulness. This monkey business, again, I talked about, I really use it to show how it's really about being humble. If you're a champion, you're humble. But if you're just a lazy, playful child playing ball, you're humble. You're just here for fun. So really, I think sense of humor was just a natural expression of my playfulness all along the pages. And yeah, I was just cracking jokes and making, you know, funny comments. You have lots of birds in the book making crazy comments. So it's funny, I guess, but I don't really see it as jokes or like a sense of humor I'm really trying to work on. Like I'm trying to be funny. Mostly, I would say it's kind of absurd most of the time and kind of crazy, like mad, you know.
I see a lot of wit in your drawing, number one. And number two, there are certain, you know, callbacks. Like I went to the University of Kansas, and one of the patron saints of the University of Kansas is Coach Naismith, you know, James Naismith, the inventor of basketball, and everybody's basketball crazy in Lawrence, Kansas. And Swaz, we never discussed this, and I don't think she knew before she made the book that I went to the University of Kansas or any connection. I'm like, see, she's got like James Naismith pops up a couple times in this book, making the kind of, you know, kind of goofy comments, you know, and I just thought to myself, well, this is awfully fun. I there's definitely, yes, the playfulness is there. And I think whether it's intended to be belly laugh or not, there are definitely humorous touches. So.
And God knows why. I have no idea how it came up. Like I'm not into basketball. Basketball is not even, I never played basketball. It's not in the book, but somehow it just popped in and then, yes. But it's something that Tara loved about the book.
And a Canadian as well, creating the sport
yes,
of basketball.
So, Canadian.
Yes.
I think it's amazing that you're including a variety of sports. I love the fact that you're including your playfulness in your art, as well as, you know, your journey as a cartoonist. You know, we've had a wonderful conversation overall. I can't wait to see this particular book in print. I'm looking forward to supporting it. The Zoop campaign itself, just to kind of go back to that briefly, what perks do you have available?
Zoop does sort of a la carte. So tiers are, you know, they do have tiers. So right now we're writing the campaign. And one thing we'd like to do, since Swaz is a bowler and that's her sport, we're going to have a bowling shirt available. I'm trying to come up with, you know, sort of, you know, some sort of other bowling themed backer rewards, prints, of course. Some of these, like we've, as I've mentioned, these page breaks are all print-worthy pieces of art. So we're definitely going to be offering those prints, you know, as backer rewards, the usual, the book and the digital copy, etc. See if we can also do some stickers, because we've got all these, you know, delightful, you know, products of her imagination. Swaz is a bird. You know, Swaz is Swaz. Swaz is a child. So I think that, you know, there's no shortage of visual delight that we can convert into stickers and other merch.
Before I jump into my introspective questions here, is there anything that I haven't touched on that you'd like to showcase those that are watching, listening to this interview?
I just want to say something about the book in general. And I think that something that another through line and theme in a good sport is the sort of the global fellowship of athletics, you know, something that we would hope the Olympics would do for us, but the Gay Games, you know, does to, I think, in an even purer way. Swaz does a great job of capturing that. And at a time like now, with, you know, the conflicts in the world going on, I think it'll be good for people to sit down with a book that encourages us to find the things that bind us rather than the things that separate us.
How do you see this book contributing to a broader conversation about the LGBTQ+ rights and experiences of queer athletes around the world?
In the book, there are several overlapping narrative threads. There is my voice, there is my personal individual experience, and it's my personal journey. But then part of the book is also a documentary and a comment on the Olympics. And also you have the voice of an athlete, a lesbian athlete from Uganda in Africa. And then you have the voice of a French guy, a gay guy in 1982. So you have different voices. And I think a topic for discussion is the diversity of voices And like I said earlier, Tom Weddle's vision of universal values. And I think it's beyond LGBT rights. You said it yourself, Kurt. We all experience somehow, at some point in our lives, exclusion. And I think everybody struggles. And I think we need to have a more generous, universal vision of society as humans. Of course, we have labels. We need them. We need to identify as whatever. And we fight for our rights. We're different. Some of us struggle more than others. But on an individual level, we all struggle. And so I think you don't have persecutors and victims, you know, on one side and on the other side. We are all human beings, and we need to live together and collaborate and play together, play the game of freedom. And so that's my message. My message is it's good to create communities. It's good to embrace and claim an identity. But first and foremost, you are a citizen. And you are part of society, whoever you are, and we need to play together.
I think that also there's a certain benefit in pursuing the things that you love and the things that excite your passion and engage your ambition. Those are the things that, you know, also lead to freedom to take on a challenging task, such as participating in a global competition, which also turned out to be a bit of a collaboration, which we'll see if you read the memoir. Once you read the memoir, you will read the memoir. Everybody will. That's what connects us with people. That's that our passion connects us with other people.
Everyone has one person that inspired them on their path to where they are today. Who was that for you?
I don't know. I guess that a friend of mine who's a little bit younger than me, you know, was maybe about half a generation younger than me. She said that all you Gen Xers talk about how Love and Rockets changed your life. And I guess if we're thinking about influences, I think that Jaime Hernandez probably was the cartoonist that changed my complete perspective on comics, and, you know, really just told me that comics can be about so much more than the sort of categories that I had been exposed to before. You know, and it had been, you know, newspaper strips and superhero comics and maybe some humor comics, like, you know the Archie stuff and the and Richie Rich and the Harvey stuff, you know. And this was when I first saw the Locas stories, the Mechanics stories from Jaime. I just knew at some point this was the comic I always wanted to read and never could find and never even knew I wanted to read. At that point, I just completely changed my focus and had different expectations from the comics I read and different intentions in the comics I wanted to make.
I've had so many heroes in my life. It's hard to pick a name, but if I had to pick someone, I would choose to name Claire Bretochet. She is a French comic artist. She died. She passed away about like a couple of years ago. She gave me a new vision of what comics could be as a kid. So as a kid, I read comics like French, Belgian comics like Tintin, you know, all that stuff. It bored me, to be honest. I didn't like the stories. I could never finish a book. I liked the idea of comics, but most comics I had to read were not interesting. And then my mom started buying those comic books by Claire Bretochet. So she was a woman at the time. Very few women in French comics were known. And she was a free spirit. And she self-published at first. And she became very successful. She was very smart. And she was basically a satirical comic artist, making fun of French society, making fun of people. And my mom loved it. My mom did not read comics at all, but she would let me read the books. The books were more like adult books. So it was a lot about sex, a lot about politics, and I didn't get it. And I would ask my mom, like, what is this? And she would say, that's that. But so I would get lost sometimes and would not understand everything, but I realized comics. So the style is not mine at all. The topics, you know, the art is not at all what I do, but she made a great impression on me, of course, as a little girl in the 80s, reading her books. I thought to myself, a woman can be free, a woman can have a personality and make art, and she's awesome, you know. So I really looked up to her, and when she died a couple of years ago, I cried. because it was really the end of something. Now people realize she's a major figure of French comics.
From a professional standpoint, you're both successful comic creators as well as a publisher too. And you've created many successful works in the past, so professionally you're successful. Do you consider yourselves personally successful?
I would not consider myself successful as an artist yet. I think I'm just going to school still. I would consider myself to be successful when I have published several books of my own, several graphic novels. When I have matured my work, like I said, it took me years to find my style, and it will take me years to really be proud of work. In my personal life, I would say that I feel successful because I enjoy what I'm doing. I do things because I find pleasure in them, because I enjoy them. And I'm happy to live every day doing what I have to do. And for me, that is success. You know, I don't waste my time with painful tasks or things that people impose on themselves so they fit in. Like I said, fitting in was always out of my league. But I win the game every day. Having fun really is what's up my alley.
Love the bowling references.
I've had some successes. I kind of think about success from book to book. We've had I published a couple of award winners, and I've had some comics that have been of my own that have been well received. I'm 53, and comics alone do not provide all the income I require. I still have other sources of income and other avenues I have to pursue in order to pay the mortgage and all that stuff. Maybe someday when I grow up, I similar to Swaz, says she's still going to school. I'm still in the process of becoming a grown-up cartoonist and a grown-up comics person, which I think is pretty positive from where I'm at. I know that a lot of people, they can get to a point in their career where they feel like it's become a grind or the magic has kind of gone out of it. I still have that. I still have that. And I have some plans for some of my own cartooning work to put out after I, make sure that this next group of books, including Swaz's book, are launched successfully. More to come on that.
The reverse of success is failure. How do you deal with your failures?
Mostly alcohol. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I had a flop Kickstarter a few years ago for a book that, another one of these situations I jumped into heedlessly, thinking thinking I could make something out of nothing. And, we had a lot of, good people contribute stories, but it didn't succeed in its Kickstarter. A lot of the support from friends and colleagues in the business to help get this thing the kind of attention it needed, that never really materialized. And I just, for a while there, I was just kind of down on it. I didn't want to do any more crowdfunding because I thought, well, what a mess this is, two failed crowdfunding campaigns and this book is an orphan. That being said, I kind of got back into it. I published things that I could publish that didn't require me to, raise big chunks of money, more coloring book, more of Jillian's series, Kalogrenant, which is another story for another time, and just kind of kept my hand in and kept plugging away. And I think that's the secret. Just keep doing what you can do and don't get so discouraged that you just drop everything.
I would agree. I just move on. When I was younger, I would get paralyzed. I would be mad at myself. I would feel like I was personally responsible. But I think failure, you have to turn it into a lesson. That's very cliche, but that's the truth. So now when I fail, I stay very calm. I'm surprised myself how calm I am. Different types of failure at work, doing a task, failure at meeting a deadline, or sometimes failure at judging people. You trust people you shouldn't have, and you're mad at yourself. But in the end, I just tell myself, okay, I didn't know how to handle this. Now I do. And I just keep going. So mainly in art, I don't think you are creating art, to go back to comic art. I don't think you fail. You just create. But looking back at what you did, you don't always feel happy. You have to accept, like I was talking about being humble, and when you fail, you have to remain humble and be a good sport and just move on, because it's part of the game to mess up, miss the ball.
The younger generation is looking at your work and they're becoming inspired but creative in their own way, whether it's as a comic artist or creator of some way, shape, or form, maybe you've inspired them on their path. How can they inspire the generation that follows them?
We work in queer comics, queer-themed comics, and a lot of what I would call emerging identities. There are ways of looking at gender and sexuality that we weren't aware of. I wouldn't say they didn't exist, but we weren't aware of. We didn't have vocabulary for, when we were growing up in the 80s, 90s, whenever we were growing up, and a lot of folks who are non-binary, asexual, demisexual, pick, all of them with the pride flag and a letter and an acronym as things go, and which is, this is great. And I think that, we pushed the door open a bit and raised awareness for us and for the things that we had vocabulary and a concept for. And the next generation is going to do the same thing. Every 20 years, and this is something that the younger generation doesn't realize yet, I don't believe, is that every 20 years, all of this vocabulary turns over. And the words that we use today that seem cutting edge and accurate are going to seem 20 years from now retrograde and reactionary. So the nomenclature wars will continue, but the experiences are eternal, the sorts of feelings that we have and the sorts of lives we lead. And I think that continuing to explore new ways of expressing ourselves and new ways of being, that's what I hope the succeeding generations can do.
Yeah, I agree with Tara about future generation finding new ways of defining things. And sometimes they do invent new ways of living and new ways of defining new options in life or identities. Myself, and this is one of the things I talk about in the book, I'm mostly grateful to the previous generations. And that's something I would like to pass on to the next generations. However, backwards or however wrong you think older people are, like you said, they might seem reactionary or totally out of it. Look back and appreciate the work of pioneers and the courage of the previous generations. So I think, of course, you have a generational progress, improvement. In the end, it's also about looking back at this this legacy. This is really something I really wanted to insist upon in the book, In a Good Sport, is the legacy that we have, we're not always aware of. And so looking back is also important.
If your life was a comic book, what would its title be? And what would its soundtrack be?
Oh, soundtrack. It's hard. The music. Oh, I guess. I don't know. I guess like surf music, like the guitar, like surf music from the 50s. That would be my soundtrack. And of course, the title would be A Good Sport, because really it is not just because it's my book, coming out, but it's really a good definition of for my personality, I think. Keeping a brave face, whatever turns out to be, whatever comes in the way, and just rock and roll.
I don't know. The title, I'd have to put some thought into that. I think that if there were a soundtrack, we'd probably have a lot of, late 70s, early 80s, new wave, post-punk, but also a lot of the great American songbook, a lot of the Irving Berlin and Cole Porter jazz. I try to stay relatively current on music, but I think for like a lot of people, the stuff that's most dear to me is probably stuff that already exists that I listened to when I was in my teens and 20s, stuff that was, music of the 70s, 80s, and some in the 90s. A comic book, I don't know, it'd be hard to say. I got some good titles, but I don't know if any of them apply to my life. So we'll just say to be the name of my autobiography is To Be Determined. We'll call it that. Just that will be it. Well, To Be Determined, the Terry Avery story. So that will be it. So that's it right there.
Well, I do hate to say it, but that ends this particular episode of Two Geeks Talking. I want to thank you both so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having us, Kurt.
Thank you for having us.
Before I let you both go, where can we find you? How can we support you? Of course, where is this amazing Zoop campaign?
You're going to find Zoop, zoop.gg, okay? Not .com, not .net, .gg, zoop.gg. Among the upcoming projects, you'll see A Good Sport, get yourself on the mailing list. We need as many people on that mailing list as possible for a successful campaign launch. Then you can find all of Stacked Deck Press's books at stackeddeckpress.com. Also, most everything is available on Amazon for those of you who wish to purchase through the global empire that is Amazon. Upcoming books, just to plug, we've got not only A Good Sport, but We Belong, the all-Black, all-LGBTQ sci-fi fantasy anthology, and our latest coloring book offering, the Polyamory Coloring and Activity Book, that should be ready as soon as next month.
You can check out my social media accounts. I use Facebook and mostly Instagram. And you can also reach me check out my website, SwazikJeffreyComics.com.
Wonderful. Well, like I said, that is this particular episode of Two Geeks Talking. You can, of course, find this interview and 1,000+ others on our website, tgtmedia.com, or twogeekstalking.com. That's T-W-O, not the number two. But since my website's going through a revamp, let's go to our YouTube channel, which is always updated, youtube.com/tgtmedia. The podcast is back after 12 or so years. You can find that at twogeekstalking.podbean.com, or just search for Two Geeks Talking wherever you get your podcasts. And as I say every week, everyone has a story to tell. It's up to me to help bring that out. Thanks for listening, watching on Two Geeks Talking.